This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It was 40 years ago that women from all across America gathered in Houston for the National Women's Conference. This was a big deal. It was 1977, and the women's rights movement was making big strides, and there was a huge push to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. Here's one TV news story about that opening day.
The conference began with a bit of pomp as the torch, symbolizing the women's movement, was brought into the hall and onto the stage. The torch began its journey from Seneca Falls, New York, considered the cradle of the women's movement. But the main event was the keynote address by Barbara Jordan, Congresswoman from Houston.
Human rights apply equally to Soviet dissidents, Chilean peasants, and American women. Implicit in being free to be you and me, implicit in that is the recognition of the diverse opinion represented here. We must not impose on others what we would not have imposed on ourselves. The delegates to this conference are a priori not of a single mind. We should not be of a single mind. No one person, and no subgroup at this conference has the right answer. Wonder Woman is not a delegate here.
So Barbara Jordan's advice was the advice Lyndon Johnson used to give to people. Reason together. It still remains to be seen if the conference will take that advice. Fred Rhodes for CBS News, Houston.
But that 1977 Women's Conference was also controversial. Down the street in Houston was a rival conference that was organized to stop the Equal Rights Amendment. And here's what their leader, Phyllis Schlafly, had to say.
Phyllis Schlafly of Alden, Illinois.
There are many differences between this meeting and the one in that other hall today. We started out by offering a prayer, and I think you should know that at that other meeting, they didn't have a prayer. They just started out with a moment of silence for fear they would offend many of their members who were present. I'm very proud that they excluded me from that convention, and I'm here where we're not ashamed and not afraid to ask God's blessing on this crowd assembled here today. The Commission on International Women's Year is a costly mistake at the taxpayers' expense. The whole thing was designed as a media event, a charade to go through the motions of these phony state conferences and national conferences in order to pass resolutions that were pre-written and pre-packaged a year and a half ago and published in June of 1976, and then after it was all over, to tell the Congress and the state legislatures that this is what American women want. By coming here today, you have shown that that is not what American women want. The Equal Rights Amendment says you cannot discriminate on account of sex. And if you want to deny a marriage license to a man and a man, or deny a homosexual the right to teach in the schools or to adopt children, it is on account of sex that you would deny it, and that would be unconstitutional under ERA.
Phyllis Schlafly back in 1977. Today is International Women's Day. It's a day that progress can be celebrated for gender equality under the law, but it's also a chance to take stock in the movement. There is much being debated and fought out even over today that could be right out of the newspapers from 40 years ago and even further back. Some of those issues that Phyllis Schlafly mentioned are right out of today's headlines. So how are you marking International Women's Day? Did you stay home from work today? Some are calling for a women's strike. Or do you remember these political battles back then? How do you feel about dealing with this again today? And do you think it's time for the ERA to be ratified, or is it not needed? It's still being debated. Some states are now looking at it very closely, Nevada, Minnesota, to name two. 72% of Americans, though, think that the ERA was actually passed. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Our guest this hour, Cynthia Salzman-Mondel. She's the producer and director of Sisters of 77, a documentary. Cynthia, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Also with us from the studios of KERA Dallas, Nancy Baker-Jones. She's the president of the Ruth Weingarten Foundation Women's in Texas History Project. Nancy, great to have you here.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. I'm actually in Austin, Dave.
Oh, sorry about that. And got my notes wrong. My fault. And with me in the studio, Gloria Primera. She is a former educator. She was a torch relay runner at the 1977 conference. And Gloria, because of you, we're actually having this show today because of you messaged me on Facebook. And, and I said, you know, I've always wondered about that conference in 1977, and I've always been fascinated by it. And I thought this would be a good opportunity to talk about it. And you were there.
Yes. It was 40 years ago. And I remember well, we met in the basement of a house on Magnolia and Maine. And it was called the Women's Liberation Movement. And from there, then I...
And you had to buy fire extinguishers?
Yeah, I bought a fire extinguisher to make it... past the fire code. And then from there, I joined NOW, the National Organization for Women, and was at a meeting at Trinity University, and that's when they were looking for runners. I had just started running about a mile is all, but they were looking for volunteers, and so two of us there from San Antonio volunteered.
So what was the...
And I ran, I also ran.
Oh, good for you. Yeah.
So I had that, I ran outside of Houston.
Uh-huh.
And I remember that torch, and it was a heavy torch.
Well, it wasn't that heavy back then.
Well, for me, it was heavy.
Oh, yes, if you ran very far. I didn't run that far.
Oh, I ran like about a mile and a half.
Oh, good for you.
And the oil just dripped down my arm.
Oh, my goodness.
That it was a metaphor for our struggle. So
absolutely. So let's just focus on the struggles. And I really want to think about what the mood was like in 1977. So, Gloria, when you were there, what did you think you were? Why did you go? What were you trying to accomplish?
Oh, well, I was all for women's rights, you know, with the Women's Liberation Movement. In fact, I met a neighbor who was from New York City. And I told her last night when I was talking to her, she's in Florida now. I said, you were like a breath of fresh air. And she eventually taught at SAC with me, but and we had a meeting that we would a consciousness raising meeting for 3 years, one night a week. There were about 20 of us women that met.
So it took there was a lot of happening. We had to change minds.
Yeah.
It was a revolution.
Right.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. Sure. We're going to get back to the revolution. What happened? What were the issues that were discussed? Why are these issues still so relevant today? I want to hear from some of the callers. What do you think about this movement? 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Our topic today, American women's rights over time. We're discussing the 1977 Women's Conference that was held, the National Women's Conference that was held in Houston, Texas. And people thought that was going to be the launching pad for a revolution in the United States and finally put the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, over the top and get it ratified. That amendment would equality of rights shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on the account of sex. There is still now movement to try to get this ratified into the Constitution. Texas is the only state that ratified it in the South, southern state, that ratified it and did not repeal its ratification. So Texas is on the books for putting that in the Constitution. So let me turn to you, Cynthia Mondell, the producer and director of Sisters of 77 documentary. What do you remember? What is the story? What should we take away from that year, 77?
Well, I was actually working on a film about what happens to middle-aged women when their husbands leave them. Our family laws had been changed, and it was easier for men to leave women. And at that time, they didn't have any rights. In fact, Ruth Weingarten was a consultant on that project. So I'm really glad that somebody from the Ruth Weingarten Foundation is with us today. And so I was very much involved with media and with social and looking at women's rights and really examining social change using media for women's rights. And the conference was something where the basis of the conference happened. There was every state actually had a conference to elect delegates to the 1977 conference. And so I did go to our state's meeting, and I can remember that people who were against this conference, and the men were sitting in chairs and the women were sitting by their feet. So it was a time of a lot of friction. It was us against them. So I really loved what Barbara Jordan had to say, to be very open to different viewpoints, because that had to be said at the beginning of this conference. It was a time that women really thought there would be change. We had a president, Jimmy Carter, who actually had a women's in his cabinet. Midge Costanza was represented, had a women's women's bureau or women's section that represented women in his cabinet. And so we thought that a lot of the inequities were going to be looked at and rectified. And of course, we know that we still have a long way to go.
Nancy Baker Jones from the Ruth Weingarten Foundation's Women in Texas History Project, looking back at 77 and then today, what's the takeaway?
Well, I'd like to talk about how much we work for change and the fact that change has always taken a long time in our culture. Women have been advocating for reform and for equal rights since the American Revolution, but it took 72 years just to win the right to vote. So the fact that we didn't come away from the National Women's Conference with a revolution isn't really surprising. I think the tapes that you played of the pros and cons, the speakers, Barbara Jordan and Phyllis Schlafly, reveal how deep that divide was at the time, and the fact that we still don't have the Equal Rights Amendment reveals how powerful the anti-opinions are still in our culture.
We talk to people on the streets, the person who cuts my hair, and I'll ask her what she thinks about things, and they don't really know about stuff like this, even though it directly impacts their lives. And I look at something like the passage of the Marital Property Act of 1967 here in Texas, and how back then, before that, married women in Texas were not even allowed to own property, that they were considered equivalent to infants, idiots, and the incarcerated in regards to having to have... People don't realize how far they have come, and I always wonder, you know, progress that is made is progress that can be lost as well if people don't maintain the fight. So, Nancy, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that's absolutely right, and that's why I still hope that we can pass the Equal Rights Amendment. We need that in the United States Constitution, I think. Although Phyllis Schlafly was afraid of it, I think what it could provide for us is the opportunity to establish equal rights for all kinds of groups of people in the United States without having to work on them case by case and court case and so forth individually.
You know, I think it's important that the listeners really know what the ERA says, because it's only two or three sentences, and it's so simplistic, and it covers so much.
Right, and we equality of rights shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex. That's
correct.
It.
And the Congress can enforce that, which is very, very important, that that, you know, there's, it's not, doesn't just say it, but that it can be enforced.
Well, the state of Texas passed its own version, a state version of the ERA in 1972 under the Prop 7, and it passed through a popular vote of 80%.
That's right. And it's still in effect. It's still on the books.
Right. If it's enforced or people know about it, those are the issues that we have to maintain. So back to you, Gloria, and your experience. So you're 80 years old?
Yes, this year I will be.
Okay.
I'm not yet. But
all right. So you were 30, I guess, 30. When the passage of the Marital Property Act of 1967 came about. And I mean, did it impact you at all?
No, I didn't know about that. It was 1970 when I read Betty Friedan's book, Feminine Mystique, and that got it started, really. And we joined the Women's Liberation Movement that met in that basement on Magnolia in Maine. And then from there, I joined National Organization for Women.
So what was it about that book? Because it is a legendary book.
Well, it showed how isolated women were at home with the babies and whatever. And even though I worked, I got that we didn't have time to get together. You know, I working all day and then, you know, taking care of family and whatever. But then I met my neighbor from New York City, and she really turned me on to now, the National Organization. And then we met one night a week for 3 years. And because I had no sisters growing up. I just had one brother. And I was hungry for the companionship of women. And
to discuss.
Right.
Intellectual.
And I firmly believe that every woman should write her book and that we should study her story, because we've been listening to his story, and that's why people don't know. Any of the young people younger than me don't know anything about women. They're shocked to think that we couldn't vote or at one time, or that we couldn't, that we didn't have equal rights.
Or you couldn't still be on juries until the 1957, I believe. I think it was.
Oh, really?
Well, I had the honor of interviewing Betty Friedan for Sisters of 77, and I took my daughter with me, and she was in college at the time, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful, enlightening interview. And so Gloria, she would love to have heard you say that her book changed your life.
Oh, yes, it absolutely did. And
just to get the facts straight, it was 1954 that's when women were kept off juries. However, women were not prevented from being judges. And so there was Sarah Hughes, I think, was the first female judge in Texas. And she was active before women were on juries. And she would note that she's the only woman in a courtroom at times. And she
actually, Dave, there was a woman named Hortense Ward who was a lawyer. And in 1925, she served as one of three women on the all-woman Supreme Court. So even though she couldn't be on a jury, she served as a judge on the all-woman Supreme Court in Texas.
Oh, I love that.
Right. So let's talk about why this conversation is important, you know, and being able to talk about these things and remind people of all of this activity. You know, Cynthia, your documentary Sisters of 77, when people see it, how do they react?
Well, I want to answer the first question first. When I left my office today, I had two young men working as interns, and I said what I was doing, and I said something about Gloria Steinem, and I said something about Betty Friedan, and they did not know either of their names. And that's not just men. But young women who have actually, I spoke to a high school in Dallas, a private school, and they didn't know their names. And that's an all-girls high school. So it's sort of disheartening to know that women's history isn't being taught, or that people aren't reading the newspaper, because certainly Gloria's in the news a lot. So I think that's showing. I've done several women's issue films. going back, I did the film about Dreams of Equality, about the 1848 conference, the first women's conference that was in Seneca Falls, where it was the first time that women actually stood up and asked for the right to vote. And I did Sisters of 77. And I, by the way, I work with my husband, so we did this them together.
Oh, great.
And it's very, very important that this history be preserved and that it's presented in a way that's exciting and that people can understand the issues and they can relate them to what's going on in their life today. Because that makes it more, that makes it even more important that they can relate it to their lives today.
And Nancy Baker-Jones?
Yes, what I want to say, I want to emphasize, is that one of the things that came out of this conference, the state pre-conferences, was the fact that women in Texas realized they did not know their own history. And out of that came the Texas Women's History Project, which really was the jumpstart for an entire field of Texas women's history, which is alive and well now, through university faculty and people who are doing research in women's history in our foundation, which furthers that for the general public and for teachers and others. But the fact that it exists doesn't mean that it gets taught or that it is taught correctly. So I would concur in the fact that it's badly needed.
And Gloria, you brought some history artifacts with us in the studio today. We have photographs posted on our website at tpr.org. What did you bring here?
Well, I brought the booklet from there, and I
from
also...
From the 77 conference?
Yes, and also the meeting of Texas women before that, and the invitation to the banquet there in Houston, which I did not attend. It was $15 back then, but that was like $50. So the runners and I were staying in my... we had my van, and... I took them up there. But anyway, yeah, I used to tell my students that freedom of the press belongs to those that own the press.
What students?
My students at SAC.
What class?
Reading and education.
Okay.
Because we had critical reading, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I think I acknowledge you so much for you speaking out.
No, so but you tell your students you have to be aware of this, you have to read this.
Oh, well, and I could assign reading books. It was Ida Pride as a counselor. They didn't need any at the time and said, well, would you consider teaching a reading class? I said, I like to read. I guess I could. You know, they didn't have them back then. And we had them read five books. They read a lot about women. They read about the black woman, what was her name, that was the first representative in Congress, Unbought and Unbossed was the name of her book. And then I had them read about Elizabeth Stady Katie Stanton. Right. Mm-hmm. And I had them read Maya Angelou, The Why and Why the White, the Caged Bird Sings. Anyway, I could assign any books, and we got into a lot of good discussions and their points, but...
Okay, so we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take a call from Sean. Our phone lines are open if you want to join the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. When we come back, I do want to continue talking about the ERA and why the drive to get it back on and pass it. Why is it needed? Why do people think it's not needed? Also, look at many of the planks that were talked about in the 1977 National Women's Conference in Houston. Some of these could be just right out of today's issues that we are concerned about and why that is and where we need to go with that. And what are people doing today to honor, to recognize, to mark that today is International Women's Day? The number again, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the International Women's Day today and American women's rights over time and how there has been a fight for these rights of to the right to vote, to right to be on a jury, the right to own property, many things that people consider you don't even think about. You know, 50 years ago, a woman would not be allowed to buy a car if she was a married woman because it was the husband's right and she was only considered to be a legal extension of him. So that would be impossible. But today that has changed because in 1967, there was the passage of the Marital Property Act. And you can thank Luis Raggio for that.
Raggio
for that. Thank you for the correction. You know, because I didn't study this in school. They didn't teach you this stuff in school. Not that I actually went to school, but yeah.
No, I knew Louise, so.
Well, talk about that, about her, because she's kind of an interesting figure, a someone I think that people should know about.
Oh, you want me to talk about her, or is there a question?
No, okay, you go ahead.
Louise, this is Cynthia, and Louise is from Dallas, and she was just wonderful and had a great sense of humor. And she would always say that she would be the only woman there in the, you know, with all these male lawyers. And she would just, you know, say these things and they would go, oh, go, little woman, you go ahead and you take care of that family act. And she said, and I did. And so she really changed a lot of laws in Texas, and the men voted on them without reading them because they thought it was family, it was something that this little lady would take care of. And she was a short little woman with a lot of spunk, and Louise was just wonderful. She recently, I think in the last couple of years, passed away.
Right, and she was responsible for overhauling the family code of Texas, making it at the time one of the most progressive ones in the state. She was a leader in this area, but people have wondered, you know, so that she was had a touch, a way about her of approaching men doing that thing. It wasn't a confrontational way. It was more she would bake cookies and bring them in as she would try to get laws passed.
And they would just she was just a sweet little lady.
Go ahead.
Is that male-female dynamic is one of the reasons that Louise Raggio, decided that what she wanted to do was not support the Equal Rights Amendment in Texas, but go for the Marital Property Rights Act, because she believed that it might be easier to pass, but also she didn't exactly support the Equal Rights Amendment in the way that Hermine Tobolowsky did. And so there were two women who had the same desire to see women get equal rights, but they went about it in two different ways. So Tobolowsky and the Business and Professional Women's organization supported the Equal Rights Amendment, and Raggio went a different route. And eventually they both got what they wanted, but that's a symbolic of the kind of difference in tactics that women have had with each other over the years.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see the dynamic between the two. And but that goes back to what Barbara Jordan was talking about at the beginning of the program, that there is no Wonder Woman, there is no woman with a single answer, that it's going to take everyone doing what they can.
And and if I could also add that when the vote was won by women, it was primarily something that was won by white women. Because of segregation and racism, especially in the South, African American women and Tejanas were denied the vote essentially until the Voting Rights Act in 1965. And so what you have after women, mostly white women, win the vote is a sort of parallel tracks where white women are going ahead and running for office and moving ahead with many of the kinds of things that they had won as a right of, as a result of winning the vote, whereas African American women and Tejanas had to dig in and keep working in order to achieve equal civil rights and votes for themselves. And it really took the end of the white primary in 1944, the Civil Rights Act in 64, the Voting Rights Act in 65, the death of the poll tax in 66, and the decline of the Ku Klux Klan before these women actually achieved what white women had already won.
A lot there, and I would like to do a show on each one of those things that you ticked off, because they all fascinate me. Let's get a caller on the air, Sean. And Sean, thanks for being patient. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I just kind of have a response to a comment you made why it's important to keep this discussion going today. I just like to say that it seems that even though outwardly most of us know that, you know, women can do just about anything a man can do, and that's widely accepted, we're still operating with this programming that is not the case. And it infiltrates into our decision-making and our policy-making and our teaching and our laws and everything that we do. So I'm so glad that you're doing this show, and I think it's enormously important that it gets into our classrooms and more prevalent in our education system, because we are still operating on that old programming. It still exists in all of us. And I just want to use one quick example of my grandmother saying to me when I was in high school, make sure you marry a rich man, because at least then you could marry any man, but if you marry a rich one, at least you'll have money. And I just looked at her and said, well, maybe I'll just make my own. And
I want to make a comment on that, Sean, because then that means that you're only one man away from poverty.
Exactly. You know, but and my grandmother, of course, loves me unconditionally, but she grew up with that different mindset, and mm-hmm. she thought that was a very loving thing to say to me. She thought she was protecting me.
All right.
You know, so it's just that different way of thinking. Anyway, thank you, and please keep going on.
Sean, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. And to the point she brings up about economic opportunity, education opportunity for women so that they can be independent and decide their own fate and not be reliant upon a man to figure out where they're going to land in the hierarchy of society. You know, that's part of the fight, is to make sure that women have access to all of these things, including quality public education and access to higher education. Is that something that you think about, Nancy Baker Jones?
Oh, yes. Equality of access is essential. It's really at the root of everything that women have been fighting for. I really think that one of the reasons that the Equal Rights Amendment has not been ratified is because there aren't more women in state legislatures. And so those are the bodies that ratify it. And we're really pretty much stalled out at women being about 20%. In a few states, it's more than that, and in a few states, it's less than that. But we aren't going to get real legislative power until we get women to be 40 or 50% of legislatures. And at the rate we're going, that's going to take a very long time.
But we're seeing a sharp rise in the number of women who are running for office right now.
Yes, and that happened also in 1992 as well. That was called the Year of the Woman. There was a sharp rise. The problem is that they're not they have to win, and they also need to have progressive ideas, because obviously there are a lot of conservative women who don't support these kinds of reforms.
We've seen from statistics that when women do decide to run for office, they have just as good a chance of winning as a man does.
So, I think that's probably true, as long as they have the same resources.
Right. Well, let's get another caller on the air with Norma. And Norma, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I appreciate what these two ladies are, and, of course, NPR and yourself. I would like for us to continue this conversation and stronger and somehow get ourselves together and put some monies together and maybe even use the tech companies where they say that they have so many men, but very few females are in these areas, like in San Francisco and even Austin and here in San Antonio. I would like for us to maybe start a museum and do a yearly conversation, because so many young women do not know anything about what has gotten them to where they are. And it's very sad. And I think that part of it is that if we do something like that, where we don't have very many women in legislatures and ratifications and stuff like that because we don't have the numbers, well, I feel that if we start having conversations and making sure that all young women have to be a part of something, not that they have to agree with everything that we said then or now, but that they have an open mind and they know where they come from and that it wasn't always like this and that it can be better than what it is now.
Norma, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate that. We get the board's filling up, so I'm going to get another caller on real quick. Glenn. Hi, Glenn. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. I'm certainly enjoying this. My question is, what is the current status of the ERA on getting ratified? How many states have ratified it, and how many more do we need to get it done?
All right, Glenn, great question. And Nancy, can you answer that?
Sure. We need three more states to ratify it, and that has been the case since 1982. We got to 35, and we need 38. And I understand that Nevada has passed it in its Senate, and so it might be it might be one of the three states, but that's what it takes.
Right, and it's being brought up in Minnesota. There's a big public fight there to pass it. So that so it continues to move on. And did you want to add to that, Cynthia?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to say something that Ellie Smeal says in Sisters of 77. And Ellie Smeal is the founder of president of the Feminist Majority Foundation. And she says that if we had the ERA, we'd have a better opportunity for equality in the military, and we would have stronger laws for fighting sex discrimination, wages, and education. And I think that, you know, that's a lot to be said, and so that the ERA would cover quite a lot of, we're having a lot of conversations about a lot of the inequities that women face, and I think the ERA would cover a lot of that.
And that, as today, we're talking about a scandal within the Marine Corps of the sharing of photos of fellow Marines, women Marines, who are, you know, not clad, and that's something that should be a concern, I mean, right there.
Absolutely. And Norma said something about the tech industry not having a lot of women, and there's been many articles recently about how women are technologically as advanced as men, but when they go into a lot of these companies, especially these startup companies, they start to feel uncomfortable because of the of that company's way of treating women.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to continue this conversation. The phone line is 210-614-8980. Women's Rights, this is The Source. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Today is International Women's Day, also a day without a woman. There are women who are participating in work stoppages across the country. I'd be interested in hearing from somebody here in San Antonio who's participating in that. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We're talking about women's rights and the history and the progress and where we're going from here. We're joined by Cynthia Solomon Mondell, producer and director of Sisters of 77, a documentary. Gloria Primera, she is a former educator, and she's a torch relay runner from the 1977 Women's Conference that was held in Houston. Nancy Baker-Jones is president of the Ruth Weingarten Foundation's Women in Texas History Project. And our phone lines are busy, but we want to hear from you. So here's Martha. Martha, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. Martha Pelaez, President and CEO of the Battered Women and Children's Shelter of Bexar County. And I just wanted to contribute with a comment that while we must acknowledge all of the advances and all of the successes that we have had in advancing the causes of women all over the world and in our nation, due to the mere fact that I do what I do and that there is a place called the Battered Women and Children's Shelter, and there are shelters all over the nation, all over the world, says a lot about the work that we still have to be done.
All right, Martha, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Looking at the 26 resolutions or planks that were adopted in the 1977 National Women's Conference, battered women is in there. It's one of the top ones that's talked about there. But also there's child care, which is a big issue even today that needs to be dealt with, the ERA, as we're talking about here. Health insurance should be there for women, especially in relevant to mothers, you know, and all sorts of issues that are important. But, you know, one thing that we don't...
Can I say something
yes.
about child care? And child care, it's very important that it's not just a woman's issue, that it's, I mean, what men should be asking about child care as well. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing that we have to talk about is that, you know, back in the 70s, we sort of shut out men. We involved them, but I think the movement has moved on and realized that, I mean, it's, you know, we sort of, the movement grew up and realized that men are also part of this conversation. We can't get anywhere unless we can't say we want 50% of this and 50% of that if we also don't involve men in the conversation. And that's a very important element to this.
All right, back to the phones with Anna Isabel. Anna Isabel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Okay.
I'm really enjoying your program, except I do want to give one correction, at least for some. I'm a 12th generation Tejana, and I remember my mom, well, when she passed away, my sister and I were going through her papers, and we discovered a poll tax receipt dated 1928. So my mom and all her five sisters and all my female first cousins have always voted prior to the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And I also remember I went with my mom a couple of times down to Frost Bank to apply for a business loan. And my mom was a businesswoman, although she only had a high school education. I guess she convinced my dad, who was a Jesuit-educated Tejano, that she was able to take care of the family business. We had properties. And I remember, however, her first language was Spanish. And since I was in high school, she thought I could be of some help to her when she made her case before the bank officers down at Frost Bank downtown. Anyway, she presented her business plan. It was very simple, but all mathematically correct. And I remember the officer sitting back in his chair and saying, Mrs. Gonzalez, if every business person was as good at your math as you are with your math, we wouldn't have any business people coming back to us to ask for more loans and then defaulting on them. You have an excellent credit record. So I've always taken her example and to give me strength to, claim my rights as a U.S. citizen.
All right. And Isabel, thank you for that great story. We appreciate it. It shows sometimes that women have to show up with all their ducks in a row and their P's and Q's and everything all ready to go in order to receive the same sort of treatment that a man would get. Gloria Primera, you know, you were at the event in 1977 in Houston. You were part of the movement here in San Antonio. Where do you think we're going here?
Well, I hope we go forward by joining organizations and contributing, like I contributed to Emily's List, Planned Parenthood, support organizations. And I always say if men got pregnant, they would have cheap access to the morning after pill for 10 cents in a slot machine at every corner store. And they I just want to urge women to not mourn our status, but go out and be active, go to meetings, speak out, and contribute to organizations that help.
All right. Alan has called in. And Alan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah. What role did Ann Richards, not Governor Ann Richards at the time, play at the conference, and how do you think it affected her future?
Great question, Alan. Thank you for calling that in.
I can answer that.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so Bella Abzug called Ann Richards in to her into her hotel room, which was her office, during the 1977 convention, and said, "I'd like you, Texas. I want you to present the ERA on the floor." So that was the first time that people really knew. Nationally knew about Ann Richards because she is the one who presented the ERA at the National Women's Conference of 1977. It's in our film Sisters of 77. So Ann tells it with a lot of humor, and I cannot imitate Ann because nobody can imitate Ann. She was a one of a kind, and I certainly miss her humor, and I would love to have heard what she would be saying now. So
I'm sure to miss her. So Nancy Baker Jones.
Oh, I was just saying, I believe she was county commissioner at the time of that conference, and I think that it aided her. It helped her coalesce around the importance of women's rights, and she was also one of the advocates of women's history, and that's what she got involved in when they got back from that conference.
Yeah,
and that. But she already had a lot of interest in politics on her own.
But she says in an interview that I heard about her talking about this event, saying that this politicized other women, this convinced other women that they needed to get involved in politics, because before then, women were thought that politics was too dirty or it was a man's game.
And it was about at this time that more women were elected to the Texas legislature than had ever been elected before. And, for example, Sarah Weddington and mm-hmm. Kay Bailey Hutchison worked together to reform rape laws in the legislature. And so there was a real spurt of legislation at that time in the 70s, late 70s in particular, including the, in addition, equal credit laws, which are pretty much done now, and reform of laws that treated women differently in rape situations.
Okay, let's get Margaret on the air. She called in. Margaret, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I worked with a doctor, Dr. Marcus Dockless, who is a surgeon, and I started working with him about 69 or so. And he asked me one day if I could help his sister, Hermine Tobolowsky, to type up postcards and papers and things like that for her. And I got an education myself. My husband is deceased now, but being married then, I didn't know of all the things that I couldn't have and couldn't get on my own. And so I was more than happy, actually, to help both of them. They were just really wonderful people, and Hermine was just a really, really sweet, sweet person. And but I remember then later, we had moved. My husband had been moved with his job back to San Antonio, and we bought a house. Didn't have much of anything, and we needed a mattress and a refrigerator to just kind of start life in the new house. And we went to Sears, and Sears declined to sell it to us, even though I had been in federal civil service, transferred, didn't have, had a good job and everything. But they said, well, my husband hadn't been working at his new job for that long, so therefore we were declined.
Wow.
And that's when Hermine, it's like, oh, my God, that's what happened. That's what happened to me. So when I started working with her on typing, whatever it is that I could do for her to help her in her cause, I was so happy to do.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Another caller quickly, Kristen. Kristen, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. The first-time caller. This is awesome. So I'm a public education teacher. I'm a mother of a 5-year-old boy and a 2-year-old girl. And I have a question to the people on that are, you know, on the show right now. How can I raise my children to, my daughter to be a strong woman right now and my son to be a respectful young man of women when society's doing nothing but telling them otherwise?
All right. So let's
I can answer some of that. I think it's very, very important that you read strong books to both of them. With strong female characters and with strong male characters, and let them. And I have a 4-year-old grandson,
PBS.
And I make sure that we read stories about strong female characters to him.
Okay, so let me get Nancy Baker's answer on this. Nancy Baker Jones.
Yeah, I would say that kind of information is essential, making sure that they get a good equal sense of history of what women have accomplished in the past as well as in the present. And I would also have similar expectations of them in terms of not segregating their tasks and their chores around the house by gender, and making sure that they both understand they have a responsibility to behave, you know, in a way that treats everybody equally.
And Gloria Primera, quickly, a quick answer.
The PBS station, I think, does an excellent job of gender.
And so making sure that you watch the right channels.
Right, right. All right,
so we're out of time. I want to thank all of our guests, Gloria Primera, San Antonio former educator, Torch Relay Runners, Houston 77 Conference, Cynthia Solomon Mondell, producer, director, Sisters of 77, and Nancy Baker Jones, president of the Ruth Weingarten Foundation's Women in History, Texas History Project. This is The Source. Texas Public Radio.